Arguably, there are more American teenagers in treatment programs, therapeutic boarding schools, wilderness programs, and other residential mental health facilities than at any other time in our history. Of course, this means that there are also a huge number of parents who have to prepare themselves for their child's return home. But here on Licensed to Parent, we do want to offer some insights into parenting teens that will help keep your child out of the residential programs and on the straight and narrow. So welcome home. This is Licensed to Parent. Hello and welcome to Licensed to Parent, the radio outreach of Shepherd's Hill Academy, which is a year-long residential program for teens in crisis located just north of Atlanta. Our host is Trace Embry, the father of five and the founder and executive director of Shepherd's Hill. I'm Rich Rossell, also a father of five and a former member of the Captain Kangaroo fan club. And Trace, today we really do want to focus, at least for a little while, on therapeutic intervention, I guess, as a whole, but more specifically on what happens afterwards. And not a lot has been published about how parents should prepare for their child's homecoming after being out of the home for a few months or maybe even a few years.
No, that's true, Rich. But what I don't want our listeners to think that just because they don't have a child in residential care, that this program couldn't be pertinent to them, because I think that what we'll be discussing today will be good for any parent at any stage in their parenting journey.
Right. And we have a special guest with us to discuss this. In fact, someone who has written on this subject. Our guest today is Ruben Jimenez. Ruben is an author, a speaker, coach, counselor, and a licensed therapist specializing in helping families navigate through a very difficult transitional period. His first book is entitled The Road Home, and it's a guide for parents of kids who are coming home from a therapeutic treatment program. And as they describe it themselves at Ruben's website, it answers the questions in a no BS, easy to read way. And we'll have details at the end of today's program on how you can get a copy of The Road Home.
Ruben, welcome to the Licensed to Parent broadcast.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Yeah, and I want to thank you for writing this book, The Road Home. I think you bring to light some great insights that our listeners are going to benefit from. I think it can be a benefit to parents, whether they have a kid in treatment or not. Tell me, Ruben, what exactly was it that inspired you to write this book?
Well, that's a good question. First of all, I noticed there was a dearth of books about this. And so it was on my mind for years as I was working with families post-treatment. Now, I've worked with a lot of families before they ever considered treatment and during treatment and then after treatment. And I consistently noticed that there was significant problems when someone went home from treatment, and the parents were often not sure what to do. And I felt like oftentimes they were not adequately prepared for that transition. And it would be unfortunate to see their child regress so much. They had healed so much in treatment, and then they go home, and the parents are not sure quite how to support their child. And so I put together some thoughts I had been using for years with families that was working. And then I put it into this book, and it's one of probably 20 ways to approach the issue, but this is how I chose to do my work and what I thought would work best for most families.
Well, you know, one of the questions that we get asked a lot here from parents inquiring at Shepherd's Hill is, what is your success rate? And, you know, I have to go back and say, because that's a very subjective question, what answer, if you were a parent, would you want to hear to that question?
Here's been my answer to that question. I don't work with thousands and thousands of people at a time. I can only work with so many. My success rate is really high. I think that's because I control the quality of my work. If we define success by not needing treatment again, the family is truly healed and moved on and moved towards a healthier approach, I see success rate as high as 90%. Now, that's because I'm working with a small number of people. If I were a program that had hundreds and hundreds of families I'm working with, I don't know if I could claim the same rate. Mm-hmm. I would say this, though. My desire is that every program would have a transitional component that supports families when the child returns home or goes off to school or tech school or college. It's the right thing to do. It's the ethical thing to do, and it ensures the gains that were made in treatment.
Absolutely. Yeah, what I tell parents is 100% will be transformed. It's really just a matter of degree, and depending on how they do the exit program will determine just how successful they make it. A lot of this is a parenting issue. A lot of people think we have a youth problem today, but I really, and you can expound on this, I think we have a more of a crisis in parenting. Can you comment on that?
I would totally agree. Here's what I saw. When kids came home from treatment, I could see that the child had grown tremendously. They'd healed almost in all ways. And then I saw them come home with the contract that was made in treatment between the child and the treatment center. And it was a good effort, but it really wasn't what the parents were about. It wasn't parent-centric. Mm-hmm. It wasn't a rocky foundation to build a home. It felt more like sand. And I really believe that, I really believe this from my heart, that the family is the first church, mm-hmm. and that if the parents sort out their home and do their soul work, and that is the foundation of the family, and that the parents are clearly an executive branch, and they're parenting with really solid boundaries and structure, with love and compassion, of course, but firm boundaries and structure, it'll allow that child to grow up healthy. And so when a child goes to treatment, I think what actually works the best in treatment is that structure, that love and firmness that we do in treatment. And if we could do a nice baton pass back to the parents and train them and teach them and coach them on how to have that nice, solid structure for emotional safety, it'll increase the likelihood of their child holding on to the gains they made in treatment. Yeah. Tremendously.
Mm-hmm. One thing that comes to mind, Ruben, even if parents believe that the problem that got their child into a therapeutic program in the first place was 100% the child's problem, we as parents have to remember that we are the soil with the fertilizing and everything else that goes on. Our home is that. So that the child that grew into whatever it was that got him or her into the therapeutic program, if they're coming right back into the same soil, they're going to end up right back in the same problem. So even if it was largely the child's doings that got him or her into the program, we as parents have to change that soil at home so they come back into a better environment, don't we?
Absolutely. Amen.
What do parents seem to understand least about juniors' reentry into the home?
I think they don't realize that their child got very genuine and honest with themselves and needed emotional safety to do that. And they need to go back home to an environment that knows how to maintain honest, healthy dialogue on a daily basis. Mm-hmm. So the child can keep telling their parents who they are as they grow. If the parents and the child can keep that dialogue, that will win the day. If they lose that dialogue, it's the beginning of regression. It's the beginning of the end.
Yeah, I noticed a lot of parents think that they can go back to business as usual, and they go back into their hustle, bustle, busy lives. Junior is a latchkey kid, and they wonder why things fall apart. What are some things that parents should be diligently doing to prepare for Junior's return while he's in residential care?
I think in the best situation that they would be preparing months ahead with the treatment center. Mm-hmm. My recommendation is that they start asking to meet weekly with their therapist and their child, preparing for the transition home, and have all the ducks in a row before that child ever graduates from treatment. Mm-hmm. For example, the parents ought to be laying out specific expectations and rules and really putting it out there to the child to dialogue so that child can interact with that new information. And if the child's struggling with something like a curfew or random drug testing, that the child has that emotional blow up at treatment, not when they get home.
Right.
So the parents, if they were in a best case scenario, if parents could spend a month or two before graduation really sorting out all the boundaries and how they're going to consequence and respond to certain situations way before the child graduates.
Yeah, because I think there's a sense of security that Junior gets when he knows that parents are going to enforce boundaries. I'm just wondering how much of the success that residential programs have is nothing more than the child knowing that there's going to be boundaries and boundaries consistently enforced and relationships developed.
Well, and it's kind of funny because when the parents do this, when the parents really show up and are active, they're proactive, it almost startles the child. And the child's expression is like, you got to be kidding me. You're going to actually hold me accountable now for all these things you didn't before.
It's almost a relief to them.
It's a relief. It's a shock, and mm-hmm. it's a relief. And, you know, here's what I've learned. That child will rarely tell the parents, I feel relieved. but they'll tell me.
Right.
And they'll go, you know, down deep, I'm not really excited about all these rules, Ruben, but I feel a lot better now. My parents have done their homework. They've sorted themselves out.
What I've noticed about that is, it confirms the spirit-flesh battle that we all deal with, and our kids deal with, too. It goes back to a sense of security, as I see it, and I'd like you to comment on this. Parents tell me all the time that you can't tell me that my kid wants to hear no from me. And I'm saying, your kid does want to hear no from you. And, you don't know my kid. And I'm like, well, you know, maybe the carnal side of who he is doesn't want to hear no, but the carnal side isn't the sum total of who he is. There's a deeper spiritual side to that child that really wants things to be more congruent with the image of the God who created him. And the only way I can seem to make parents understand this is traffic lights. And when I ask them, I say, do you like stopping at traffic lights? And inevitably they'll say no. And I'll say, but if you had to vote those traffic lights in or vote those traffic lights out, what would you do? Well, I'd vote them in. Well, didn't you just contradict yourself? No, because if you had to drive from, you know, the East Coast to the West Coast with no traffic lights at every intersection, that would give you a tremendous sense of insecurity. And when we don't enforce boundaries with our kids, then that gives them a sense of insecurity. And they're going to go out and find a sense of security, whether it's sex, drugs, rock and roll, gangs, or guns. And how will they find it? It's going to look really strange to you as an adult. Can you comment on that?
Here's what I tell parents. Your child heard no all the time in treatment. Your child did well because we had all this structure in place and it said, we got your back.
Right.
You're safe. Now I need you to drop into who you really are, mm-hmm. who God made you to be. Now you need to go there. Mm-hmm. We have everything taken care of. When you're going to wake up, when you're going to cook, who you're going to cook with. We've got you taken care of. We've got structure. We're holding you. Now go take care of yourself. It works.
Yeah.
So then I tell the parents, now you need to do the same thing. Now, we don't need to be overly regimented and give a ton of rules, but we need to give basic structure.
Sure.
And the child totally understands that and respects that. It's almost like the child knows they need to be told no more than the parents do.
That's exactly
And I
right.
often find parents that are afraid of really standing in their own ground. I find this is more of a parenting problem.
But why is
they're
that?
They're afraid of being firm. I think they're afraid. I think they want to be close to their kid, want them to be best friends instead of a parent.
Mm-hmm.
And what I think they don't realize is that if you sacrifice being a parent to be a best friend, that child will resent you when they're 30 years old.
That's exactly right.
But if
right.
you show up and you're the parent first, you'll get the friendship when they're 30.
Right.
Yeah.
Because it's basic respect.
Sure.
There's also an issue of, for everything we do, generally we need a good support structure underneath it in order to be successful. And the framework that we're building by having boundaries builds the support that allows the child to grow up and be free to be who God calls them to be, because they've learned the structure underneath it. Let me get back for a moment, though, Ruben, to something you talked about bringing the kids home. You had said that parents should... maybe, you know, a few months ahead of that time, be meeting on a weekly basis with the counselor and with the child and establishing the boundaries and the consequences and whatnot. Should that discussion take place amongst all of them, the parents, the counselors, and the child, or is that something that should just be between the parents and the counselor and then at the end unveil what it's going to look like to the child? What works best in this situation?
I think that's a great question. What I do is I have the parents just meet with the program that first month to make sure that the right information is being passed. It's basically adult language, adult conversations. It's not appropriate for the child in treatment to be part of those discussions. It's just not appropriate.
Okay.
I think that last month, though, you start bringing the child in at least 2 to 3 times so that they can dialogue and feel part of the process and feel like that there is a genuine dialogue going on.
And I think I don't want to put words in your mouth, but I think you said that sort of allows them to experience the feeling of what's to come while still being in the program. So if they want to bark about it, they're not barking at home. They're barking while still under the structure of the therapeutic program.
Yes, that, and it also gives them a voice. I find that when you bring them into the process, they often come up with better consequences than the parents.
That's true.
And sometimes I think even though these agreements should be not too negotiable, I always like it when the child participates and says, you know, Mom and Dad, I do have an eating disorder, and if we do one more consequence to support me, if I'm struggling, I'd rather see this therapist mm-hmm. instead of that therapist. Mm-hmm. So I really want them to be highly interactive.
No, I totally agree with that, but I think there is something to be said to the idea that if Junior knows that parents still will exercise their executive right to have the final say, so that I think that says something to them. If, in fact, that parent will do that, and I think there's a lot of parents who won't do that.
Well, that needs to happen. To me, with the parents I work with, that is a requirement that the parent trumps everything.
Right.
That the spirit of the parent is what runs this program, not the spirit of the child.
Exactly.
And it's not to domineer the child. It's just to let the child know that someone's in charge, and it's the parent.
Well, it should be common sense. I mean, if it's a 15-year-old child, I mean, we're talking about someone who isn't quite, you know, mentally, emotionally, physically fully developed yet. You don't have a fully developed human being there. The frontal lobe is still 10 years away from being fully developed. And so I think there's a responsibility on the part of adults, parents in particular, to make that final call. But how
common
do you respond?
Common sense is not that common, and I think that's why.
That's exactly right. We come from a biblical perspective, a Christian worldview. We kind of dig our heels in there. And I think there's a... There's something to be said that in and of itself brings a sense of security to a kid, especially a kid growing up in a postmodern world where your truth is as good as my truth. It feels good. Do it. Do your own thing. I think that lends itself to a whole lot of insecurity and a whole lot of problems in our society, more than we would care to admit. But how do you respond to the parent who truly believes that he or she has been the perfect parent and that Junior is 100% the problem? Have you ever experienced a successful reentry into a home where parents haven't had to make some changes in their parenting approach?
My experience is the parent that is a no-fault parent that thinks that they've done nothing wrong is actually the parent that has profound problems.
Mm-hmm.
And my experience also is that 95% of the parents I work with are not that parent. Most of the parents I work with have done their very best, and they know they made a lot of mistakes.
Yeah, and I would agree with that.
And they're willing to grow. But whenever I run into that far and few person who just thinks that they've done a perfect job, I still work with them. I just work with them a little bit differently.
Sure.
Because of their ego.
Right.
Our guest today is Ruben Jimenez. He's an author, speaker, coach, counselor, a licensed therapist, and the author of the book, The Road Home. It's a guide for parents of kids coming home from a therapeutic treatment program, answering their questions in a no BS, easy to read way. We will have details on how you can get a copy of that book at the end of the program, and our conversation with Ruben Jimenez will continue right after this. You're listening to Licensed to Parent. It's difficult to see the light at the end of the tunnel when you're face to face with a teenager who argues with you at every turn. Maybe you and your teen can't talk to one another about anything without it getting complicated. For nearly two decades, Shepherd's Hill Academy has been bringing healing to teens and families from around the world. Up until now, that help has come through its residential treatment facility in North Georgia. But now, your family can benefit from that experience at home through Shepherd's Hill Family Coaching, designed to help you discern God's will for your family, build good communication skills, deal with defiant children, and more. Our family coaching team will work with you by phone, in your home, at work, even while you're on the road, to help your family develop a game plan to succeed. Sign up for Shepherd's Hill Family Coaching today by visiting LicensedToParent.org. Live the family life your family was designed for. Click on the family coaching banner at LicensedToParent.org. Teen rebellion, depression, addiction, rage, cutting, and suicide are destroying our families today. But there is a way out. Shepherd's Hill Academy offers a 12-month, Christ-centered, nonprofit residential program where kids are being transformed with a biblical worldview and often medication-free. Christian apologist Ravi Zacharias is just one of many Christian leaders who understands what's happening at Shepherd's Hill Academy.
It really is such an honor to come alongside Shepherd's Hill Ministries and Licensed to Parent to rescue those who have been seduced along the way. I cannot gainsay how important this is, and to get behind a ministry like this, one will find the rewards to be extremely powerful in changing society.
Get the help you need at Shepherd's Hill Academy. Go to helpmytroubledteen.org. helpmytroubledteen.org. And welcome back to Licensed to Parent, coming to you from Shepherd's Hill Academy, just north of Atlanta, Georgia. Our host is Trace Embry, the founder and director of Shepherd's Hill. I'm Rich Rosel, and our guest today is Ruben Jimenez, author of the book The Road Home, which is a guide for parents of kids coming home from a therapeutic treatment program.
Ruben, what are some things that parents can expect upon Junior's return home? I mean, things that are pretty general that maybe parents aren't quite up on.
Well, the good news is there's a honeymoon. There legitimately is a couple of weeks to a couple of months where there's a lot of peace and harmony at home. And it's very beautiful to watch and be part of. It's exciting. And then when the honeymoon ends, there's this natural pushing of the boundaries. And it happens in, I think, all cases that I've ever worked with. And I think it's natural and to be expected. So once those boundaries start to be pushed, then it's really important for the parents to hold the line. I also think it's very important for parents to set up a regular time each week or once every few weeks where they dialogue openly with their child about how their child is doing, how the family is doing. And the parents really need to take the leadership on that. Okay. And then once the child starts pushing boundaries, it's really about holding the boundaries so the child can feel safe and realize, okay, this is the game I got to play, fair enough. And then they usually get on with life. And, of course, life happens. So over the next 6 months to a year, it's really about staying in constant dialogue with their child and holding true to the boundaries.
Yeah.
And watch the child grow into mostly a mature, healthy person. I would say this lastly. I think what I've noticed is a lot of parents are afraid to ask their child to get a job or have a work ethic, do more chores. And I wish parents would not be so afraid of that issue, because that's actually what leads to a lot of health for a person.
Well, I can't help but believe that screens and keyboards have done a lot to contribute to the fact that America now leads the world in teen suicide. You know, there's a passage of scripture, Romans 5:3-4. It says that suffering or struggle produces perseverance. Perseverance produces character, and character produces hope. Now, the number one reason the kids are giving for attempting suicide is they say they have no hope. In the richest nation on the planet, they say they have no hope. If you back that scripture up, kids are committing suicide because they have no hope. They have no hope because they have no character. They have no character because it's never been developed through perseverance, and they've never had to persevere through any struggle. And so, once again, Scripture always seems to rise to the top as far as being the preeminent counseling tool with kids that we deal with. You have any thoughts on that?
I agree, and I would also say that what I have learned is that a child needs to have a purpose, some meaning to their life.
Mm-hmm.
And just like any of us. And if they don't have something to wake up and move through those challenges of life, then they're going to lose hope and they're not going to feel value and achievement.
Right.
My last thought on that is that I think we overhear this word self-esteem.
Oh, absolutely.
And we think that somehow if a child can look in the mirror and feel good about themselves, that they're going to be okay. And that's, I don't agree with that. I think that we get self-esteem.
I'm glad to hear you say that.
Well, I think we get self-esteem by action. We have to do something with our life.
Right.
And you feel good about yourself when you do something with your life. And if you do it on a daily basis, 5 or 6 times a day.
Yeah.
And so that's how you get real self-esteem, is by actually taking your God-given talents and doing something with it. But sitting and gaming all day will destroy the soul. Firm believer.
No doubt about that. Scripture says that we should look at ourselves with sober judgment and be meek and humble in heart. How should parents handle the inevitable issue of old friends, particularly those who may have helped, you know, Junior along in his journey toward the actual needing of residential care in the first place?
You know, I don't know if I'm right about this, but one thing I've been saying to parents the last 6 months is that we're not bigger than our environment. I think we can rise above it sometimes, but we're part of our environment.
Mm-hmm.
If we want to really look around and see who we are, let's take an average of the 5 or 10 people around us. I think that's especially true for teens and young adults.
Sure.
So in my book, what I talk about is the parents, before the child comes home, has a discussion about kind of that green, yellow, and red light concept, that if there's red light friends that are toxic to the child, mm-hmm. that they be eliminated and the child not be allowed to hang out with these people. Right. And that the yellow light friends need to be further assessed. And the green light friends, of course, the child can hang out. Mm. But the parents are constantly looking at that as long as the child is under their roof, period. Because friends do affect, and the kids know this. The kids know this. Now, this is why this is such an important discussion. Most even really good kids still want to hang out with that nefarious, troublesome kid when they get home sometimes. Mm-hmm. And they're going to have to be told no. And they're going to come up with all these reasons why that friend has gotten better. But the parents have to be the one assessing and sizing that up right. on a regular basis.
Well, it sounds like you got a pretty good handle on all that, Ruben. What words of encouragement can you give parents who are either struggling with a wayward child or who are waiting the return of a wayward child from a residential facility? What words of encouragement?
From my heart, I would say that most parents I work with, I've observed, have done their very best. And sometimes it takes more than parents to raise a child. Now that you've used professionals and it's time for your child to come back home, get the troops together, build the best team you can to support your child, and stand firmly in who you are as a parent. Do your soul work. Sort out who you really are, what you really believe in, and walk it. Walk what you believe, and don't look back. Be firm. Your child will be very grateful for it.
Well, that's a good word. I often say here on Licensed to Parent and at Shepherd's Hill to parents who feel guilty, because they do feel guilty by having to bring a kid to residential care. They feel like failures. And I have to tell them, listen, the only perfect parent that ever existed was God the Father. And look what his first two kids did. And that kind of puts things into perspective.
Our guest today is Ruben Jimenez. He is author of the book, The Road Home. Ruben, real quick, I meant to ask this. We could go on and on about your book. Does it deal with sibling issues in the return home?
It does.
Okay. That's something. Let me encourage parents and families who are bringing a child home from residential care. Take a look at that part of the book as well, because not only do we have to get the parents on board with the right way to bring the child home, but brothers and sisters who are still under that roof need to be a part of that plan too. If you'd like to find out more about The Road Home or about our guest, Ruben Jimenez, you can go to RubenJimenez.com. That's RubenJimenez.com. We will try to put a link to that on our website as well at licensedtoparent.org. Licensed to Parent is the radio outreach of Shepherd's Hill Academy. And a reminder that neither of these organizations could do their best work were it not for your financial help. If you notice on our website, licensedtoparent.org, in the upper right-hand portion of the screen, you'll see a donate button, and we would so appreciate it if you might consider making this ministry a part of your regular outreach. You can give securely on our website, licensedtoparent.org, and the money that you provide goes to work with and help minister to teens in crisis at Shepherd's Hill, and better than that, the parents of teens in crisis, to help keep their kids out of residential programs through the Licensed to Parent radio broadcast. On behalf of Trace Embry, thanks so much for joining us today. We hope you'll be back with us again next time, and once again, you can renew your license to parent.
And remember, folks, if you don't train your children, somebody else will. God bless. We'll see you next time.